I am glad to say that I'm joined by my guest, Brian Moses, on the phone. And we're going to have a little chat about all the stuff that Brian has been involved with over the years. First up, though, let's just check. Brian, are you with us?
Yeah, good morning, Kerry, and thanks for inviting me onto the show.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us. It's going to be a chance to catch up with what seems to have been a very, very busy a career. So without further ado, please tell our lovely listeners, if you would, a little bit of the backstory first up about you and all this writing stuff.
Well, I started life as a primary school teacher and taught for 13 years, and I had a couple of books published while I was still teaching, and thought, well, maybe I might be able to make it as a full-time writer. I wasn't sure if I could, but I thought, I'll give it a try, because you go through life and you think, I don't want to be thinking, what if? So let's go for it. And fortunately, it seemed to work out okay. I did a lot of visits to schools and presented my poetry in schools. I do what's called a poetry and percussion show, because I'm a percussionist as well as a writer.
Okay.
And I accompany my poems with rhythms from drums and other percussion instruments.
Clever stuff. So clearly, I mean, that in its very on its very own, really, I mean, is going to get the kids' attention, isn't it?
It does seem to, and I'm always saying to them, well, look, don't just watch me do it, you know, go and get the instruments from the music trolley or the music room and try it yourselves. You know, we can all tap out a rhythm, we can all speak over a rhythm, and that's what they do, hopefully.
That's very clever. I mean, wow. I mean, when did you actually sort of start all of this off? How many years back are we going?
Well, I left teaching in 1988.
Right.
And I've been about 32 years sort of on the road, up and down the country, international schools abroad, all over
yes.
the place.
So clearly you've put the hours in, you've put the miles in, but clearly also, I mean, you've had the confidence to think, yeah, this is it. I want to go out and have a try, because as you rightly said, there is nothing worse in life, is there, than maybe getting to a stage in your life and thinking, really, I should have given that a go, shouldn't I?
Well, that's right. I mean, there are times in your life where there's a door in front of you and you can either avoid it or go through it. And I think you have to, you know, try these challenges and see where they go sometimes.
So the other thing, of course, we should ask you, because our lovely listeners will want to know, let's say, where in the world are you, Brian? Tell us where you actually call home.
Well, I'm in a small village called Burwash, which is in East Sussex, about 20 miles north of Hastings.
Right.
And it's surrounded by beautiful countryside, and I'm very lucky to live here.
And so has that given you great inspiration over the years with some of the work that you've done?
It has, particularly when COVID struck and we're all kind of confined
yes.
to our home bases. I have a big Labrador, and she needs a lot of walks, so I had to go out and walk her through the countryside. And I think I began to appreciate it even more, because you're doing the same sort of walks each day, and you see how, in the first COVID lockdown, how the spring suddenly came upon us and developed
yes.
each day. And so there's a phrase in America for people who get to know their local landscapes very well. It's called that you become a genius of the local landscape.
Right.
I think that's what we all became during COVID.
Well, no, absolutely. And I must say, over this last couple of years, with chatting to lots of the Candy Jar authors and authors from other publishing houses, I mean, the COVID lockdown really was a double-edged sword with so many writers, I think, that in many cases, clearly, just like everybody else in the general public, it was a real drag. But for a lot of people, actually, it became a very fruitful time for their writing.
It did. I mean, I think we all needed some sort of escape when we're confined to our homes, and a lot of people, I think, found it in writing, and I certainly got the idea for my latest Candy Jar book during the first COVID lockdown.
Right. Okay. So let's lead seamlessly into that then. And obviously, I've mentioned to our lovely listeners that, gosh, there's something like some 200 titles that you've been involved in over the years. So we haven't got time to go through all of those. But then the association with Candy Jar, when did that first come about?
Well, it started about 8 years ago, I think, when I wrote a childhood memoir trying to show children how different life was in the 1950s and 60s when I was their age compared to life today, because there was no technology or anything like that, and we all just made our own amusement. We kind of left the house in the morning, you rambled around the town, I lived by the seaside, and providing you a back for lunch, nobody really worried about you.
No, there is truth in that. And I mean, so many people, I suppose, look back upon those days and think, wow, that was idyllic. And I mean, to a large extent, I suppose, for kids, in a way, yeah, it was. But I mean, say to kids these days, can you imagine what life was like without mobile phones or the internet? And I mean, they stare at you as if you've got two heads, don't they?
Absolutely.
So, So the whole point is then you thought there's a story to be told about your childhood days.
For that particular book, yes.
So where did that go? Where did it go? I mean, how did you sort of actually start that? Was it literally with you in short trousers?
Yeah, I just went from when I was born up to the age of 14, just looking at things like the terrible winter we had in 1962-63, when snow started on Boxing Day and continued virtually through till March.
Yeah.
Just picked out a lot of things like that and wrote about them.
And so, was it very much an idyllic childhood from your point of view, as you said, being by the seaside, being able to go down and getting all the rock pools, or finding all those interesting bits and pieces on the seashore, and running with a nice group of mates of yours?
Well, that's right. I mean, I was very lucky, really. It was an idyllic childhood. I had loving parents, and there was a lot to do, a lot of places to explore. I lived in Ramsgate in Kent, and under Ramsgate there are 3 miles of tunnels that were put there just before the Second World War to act as air raid shelters. There are only two places, Ramsgate and Barcelona, that are built on chalk where they could hollow out these tunnels. And as kids, of course, they shut them all off after the war, but as kids, of course, we managed to get back
of
down
course
there,
you did.
Course,
yes.
And explore them, which was highly dangerous, but great fun.
So was that one of those sort of seminal moments when you first realised with your mates that all of a sudden you could be kings of this world, that this subterranean world there, underneath Ramsgate?
Well, that's right. I mean, we all read Enid Blyton books like crazy, and we were all looking for our own sort of adventures and secret tunnels and castles that she wrote about.
Yes, yeah. So once you'd written that sort of biography, childhood memories and so on, you obviously thought, yeah, absolutely, I reckon this is going to be of interest to a wider public.
Well, I hoped it would, and those people who've read it seem to have enjoyed it, and it's brought back memories for them too, which was another reason, I think, for writing it, because you don't just want to tell people your memories. You know, it's good if it sparks something off in them as well.
Well, absolutely right. I think people, certainly of a certain age, love to be able to sort of take that trip back down memory lane, and obviously then others who can evoke those sorts of memories and sort of act as a spur to people to think, oh yeah, now I remember doing something like that.
That's right.
So, fair enough. A great idea for your childhood memories to kick things off. But I mean, tell us some of the sort of characters then that you've brought into the literary world over the years to sort of get the kids' interests.
Fiction is only sort of a fairly recent part of my writing. I mean, I started writing poetry originally, and I've had many, many poetry books published, which of course don't really have characters like storybooks.
No, absolutely not.
But I've written poems on various themes, like I did a book called What Are We Fighting For with another poet, Roger Stevens, and all the poems there were about World War One and World War Two mm-hmm. and war in general, because there didn't seem to be any books of poetry for younger children, you know, that talked about war in a way they could understand.
No, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, plenty of poems for secondary kids, but we needed something for younger children, and that book's done, seems to have done very well. And then we did another book called 1066, and before that, in which he wrote about poems about the Romans and the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Saxons, to kind of introduce children to that era. And then we did one on space, we did one on dogs, we did another one on a spooky one. And they proved quite popular.
So it's been a way of sort of almost doing a bit of the storytelling through poetry. And again, as we said, hooking the kids in. And I mean, it's not only then obviously sort of telling them stories, but also clearly, as you said, through the means of poetry, introducing them to a topic in poetry, which a lot of kids probably would shy away from.
That's right, yeah. It's all about getting children writing, because children have the most amazing imaginations, and it's just a question of unlocking them and giving them the right stimuli, you know, to launch themselves into their own writing.
Absolutely. So tell us then a little bit now about a couple of the books that you've done with Candy Jar. I've mentioned to our lovely listeners Keeping Clear of Paradise Street, Something Hidden Beneath My Bed, Snake in the Loft, and The Incredible Shrinking Ghost. So please, Brian, yeah, tell us a little bit, without giving too many secrets away, about some of the storylines there.
Okay, I'll tell you a bit about The Incredible Shrinking Ghost, because that one started, as I say, in the first COVID lockdown. And as I kind of wandered around the village, the advice often given to writers is to write what you know. And I thought, well, I don't know anything more than I know this village now, having lived here for 10 years. And I thought, what could I bring into a story from the village? And very close to me, there is actually a funeral parlour. And I thought to myself, well, I haven't read a children's book where the main characters are the son and daughter of undertakers. I thought, that's a starting point.
Mm.
And then walking through the village churchyard, Birdwatch had something to do with the smuggling in the 18th century. And there are actually smugglers' graves in the churchyard with skull and crossbones on them.
Okay, right.
And I thought, and maybe I can bring this into the story. And of course, I'm going back to Enid Blyton. I love the sort of secret passageways in her books.
Yes.
And I thought maybe there could be a secret passageway from the church to the vicarage or something like that that the smugglers use.
Mm.
And that came into the story. And then I thought, what else can I use? Well, Burwash, where I live, is a place where Rudyard Kipling spent the last 30 years of his life.
Okay.
In a wonderful house here that's about 10 minutes walk from where we live. And I thought, can I bring Rudyard Kipling in? Because he wrote a poem called The Smuggler's Song.
Right.
Which has the lovely lines in it, you know, watch the wall, my darlings, while the gentlemen go by. You know, don't look out the window, keep your head averted, because you don't want to get to know these people. And the smuggler's coming along there. So that came in. And there's a fish and chip van comes around every week to the village, and that came into the story.
Wow.
So it's just a question of finding what could I bring in,
yeah,
mix,
surely,
and then stir it all up and find the story. And the story really is a ghost, The Incredible Shrinking Ghost is a ghost story. And it's a ghost story of a 10-year-old boy called Walter. And the two children of the undertakers meet up with him in the churchyard. And it develops from there. It turns out there's another couple of ghosts, and they can't leave the churchyard. But they need to leave in order to move on to the next stage of their lives as ghosts.
Yes, yes.
And it kind of goes on from there, and eventually they do manage to leave. And the last part of the book is set at Stonehenge.
Wow, well, there we are. So you're ticking a few boxes there.
I wasn't able to research, but I also had to visit.
So, with all of those, yeah. I mean, with all of those things,
fun, yeah.
I was going to say, with all of those things in there, clearly, yeah. And I mean, with obviously the beauty of having the internet to be able to check your facts on, because as you say, obviously when things were being done in lockdown, clearly the last thing you could do was jump in a car and go off and do your research in person. But I mean, It's great for kids, isn't it? Because kids, like you said, even back to the days of Enid Blyton, they like to be scared a little bit, don't they? They like to be challenged. And ghosts, I mean, obviously, always an all-time favourite topic.
They do. An author friend of mine, Anthony Masters, who sadly died far too soon, he used to write little books that children would be frightened by, but he called it Safe Danger.
Right.
Because, you're sitting in bed reading your book, and you feel frightened, but you're
safe. Absolutely, yeah. It's a lovely feeling, that, isn't it? When you were a kid, yeah, to be sort of be under the sheets, maybe even reading a book with a torch, because you're thinking to yourself, yeah, this is a bit frightening, this, but yeah, I want to find out more, and I want to absolutely see how the story finishes.
That's right,
Brian. I do need to ask you some details about how people can find out more information about your work, about your books, both those with Candy Jar and some of the poetry and so on. So please do tell us about any, social media pages and sites and so on that you have where people can go and check it out.
Sure. My website is just www.brianmoses, lowercase, brianmoses.co.uk.
Excellent.
And I have a blog that's been going for a number of years. The blog is, again, in lowercase, brian-moses.blogspot.com.
Excellent. Well, there we are. So that gives
brian-moses.blogspot.com.
Brilliant. That absolutely gives people some areas to look at. Brian, we're going to have to sort of more or less pull things together now and say thank you so much for taking the time to have a little chat. And as I always say to people, yeah, it whistles by the 20 minutes or so. I shall certainly give out more information to people about where to find out
absolutely
more information. Yeah, no, but we've done well. But thank you so much for joining me today. And fingers crossed, perhaps we can talk again in the future.
Well, that'd be lovely. Thank you so much for inviting me on again, and appreciate it. Enjoyed it very much.
Super. Well, thank you, as I say. Thank you so much, Brian. Been really, really good fun talking.